So we are trying to explore, having introduced yesterday a little bit some of the basics, the question of what is the impact of a din derabanan on a din min haTorah. Does a din derabanan rewrite a din min haTorah when it adds on to it? And what about when it contradicts it? Where exactly does this impact get felt? And we were introduced to this because on our daf, in the beginning of Masechta Sukkah, it's apparently pretty close to explicit machlokas between Tosfos here and the Ran, really a little bit somewhere else, but essentially on the same point, that the question of the din derabanan in the area of Sukkah, when you have a prohibition to sit in the sukkah in a certain way, in this case, to sit in the sukkah with your table in the house, so on a Torah level it's fine, but the rabbi said not to do it, so the Gemara has an expression, the Mishnah has an expression to someone who was doing this, that, oh, you do things like that, if that's the way you've always done it, then you've had a pretty interesting life, but in addition to that, lo kiyamta mitzvah sukkah miyamecha, you have never fulfilled the mitzvah of sukkah. And Tosfos has a line on Daf Gimel saying that, yeah, that's absolute, that afilu midaraisa lokiyim, that even on a Torah level is no good, even though it sounds like you're following the Torah's rules, sorry, no good. While according to the Ran, over there later on, the Ran says, no, no good. It's, you know, I mean, it's not everything that it could be on a level midrabanan, but clearly you're following the Torah's rules. It has to be that it is good. And this is the Ran commenting on the Mishnah on Daf Chavches. The Ritva seems to say the same point. And the Rambam added to today's list, if you had a chance to the Rambam sounds more like Tosfos, right? That it's as if you didn't eat at all. Now, one item that I didn't put on the list because you've seen it already, but now let's comment on it. What do you think of a Tosfos we saw at the very beginning? Remember Tosfos on Dav Beis in the Aleph? Go back even before Dav Gimel. You think, is there a Tosfos that you remember seeing from earlier in the year that may also impact on this question? Just to kind of throw that into the mix. Do you remember the Tosfos that asks about Simen Klala? Tosfos on Dav Beis, if you want to open it up, the last Tosfos on Dav Beis. So Tosfos asks that if it's possible for you to have, I mean, the whole basis of the question was that the walls of a sukkah are supposed to be arai, but apparently it's okay even if they're actually concrete. So the question was, well, would you say the same thing about the schach? And if so, you could have thick schach, so then why does the Gemara say it's so terrible if it rains on sukkahs? It's a simen klala. You could have concrete schach and you're not going to have to worry about the rain. So Tosfos asks the question, that should you say that, well, if I would do that, that maybe it would be a problem because of Gezeiras Tikra. And so Gezeiras Tikra would prohibit me from using that kind of shtarka schach. So Tosfos has this line here, Mikol Makom Kevin Lo Aser Ela Midura Banan Lo Shaykh Ila Meimar Shahak Shamim Simen Klala. So what does that suggest? Does that impact on this discussion at all? Apparently, Tosfos is saying that, okay, in a chanami, you're going to have sukkah that's open because of a din derabanan. But since that's a din derabanan, that doesn't make it bad that it's raining, because on a Torah level, you could have used shtark eschach that would have stopped the rain from coming in. Does that impact on this discussion? What do you think, Shabbatai?
Sounds like the rice is still very much there. That the Rabbanim were not able to.
Do, it sounds a little bit like it, right? It sounds like this Tosfos is different than this Tosfos on Daf Gimel that we were discussing yesterday. Now, is there room to distinguish between the two? Josh is thinking maybe yes. We'll have to see. We'll have to come back to that. There might be room to distinguish. There are some Sfarim that have suggested distinctions. But for now, it's just interesting to note that it seems like this Tosfos Adaf earlier is also working off a similar kind of question. So let's try to figure out if one wants to take Tosfos' position that a sukkah that is disqualified for rabbinical reasons is disqualified completely, how do you understand that? What's the mechanics there? The Torah is the Torah. How could Chazal come and impose a condition that would knock out the fulfillment and a level of Torah? So there are a couple of suggestions. It's interesting, the Sefer Dvar Avram. Familiar with the Sefer Dvar Avram? Dvar Avram was the Rav of Kovno, Rav Avram Dov Bir Kahana Shapiro. We have particular Hakar Satov to him here because he gave Smicha to Rav Soloveitchik. Not that he was his Yoredei Rebbe, but when, we can talk about it nowadays, but when the Rav left Europe to come to America, he didn't have a formal smicha program the way we do now, and you need some kind of letter showing that you're actually an ordained rabbi for the American authorities. So he went to the Dvar Avram. The Dvar Avram wrote him a letter, which you can see was published when Rav Soloveitchik passed away. They printed here Sefer Zikaron for him. And in the very beginning, it prints the letter from the Dvar Avram. And the Dvar Avram writes that halacha kamoso b'chol makom. Halacha is like him and everything. Which, as Rabbi Harari pointed out, it's a blank check in halacha. So the Dvar Avram has an important chelek in our history here at Yeshiva University. But Dvar Avram also is a beautiful sefer. So he quotes some comments, I believe from Rabbi Elia Baruch Kamoi, he was one of the earlier Rashi Yeshiva, the Mir Yeshiva in Europe, where he suggested a couple of approaches to this Tosfos, which on the surface would make it very sukkah specific. Not that this is a klal in general, but that this is something to do with a detail that is inherent in the sukkah. So, for example, one suggestion that he has is that we know that Chazal do have power over money. Sounds like an anti-Semitic stereotype, but there's a concept called Hefker Bezdin Hefker, right, which means that Chazal have the ability to devalue something halachically. So perhaps it suggests that when it comes to sukkah, this is a very elaborate kind of suggestion, but that when it comes to a sukkah, maybe there is a notion that one has to have ownership of the sukkah. And if the sukkah can be made devoid of monetary value, then it loses that possibility. So maybe Chazal can neutralize your sukkah because they can make it like it's worthless, and that's how you end up not fulfilling the mitzvah even a level of Menat Torah. Okay, could be. We do find that power invoked in other contexts. It's a good question whether that's really going to explain things here and what exactly is the role of monetary ownership when it comes to sukkah. So that's probably not the most likely of suggestions. Another suggestion he has, this is very interesting if nothing else, just for the synergy of it, but he suggests, if you can figure out where this is going, that if you have a situation like this, Chazal said, oh, you want to sit in such a way in the sukkah where your table is in the house and you're sitting in the sukkah, you're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to sit that way. And if you're not allowed to sit that way, perhaps you could say that the impact is what? And it's a sukkah-specific svara. Can you guess where he's going? Maybe that's not called... Sorry? Well, it's not called that. Maybe what halacha the sukkah require in HaTorah? Teshvu kein taduru. Maybe it's not called dira. The rabbi said, we don't accept this kind of eating. We don't accept this kind of sitting. So then maybe that's the issue. So these are very elaborate approaches, which are both a little hard to believe are really the pashup shot here, and also would make this a very sukkah-specific concept. So the Dvar Avram suggests that there's another approach here, which would broaden it a little bit. And let's consider the question like this. So the issue of a Torah mitzvah and a rabbinic prohibition on top of it, you probably could look at it from three angles. On one hand, you could say that the rabbis cannot tamper with the Din Minat Torah, and therefore the Torah mitzvah is still there, like the Ran says. The mitzvah is still there, they didn't undo it. Or, on the other extreme, you could say, like we mentioned yesterday, and we'll say a little bit more about, that no, that maybe the rabbis do have that power. Somehow they have the ability to rewrite the Torah. And therefore, yes, there is no longer a mitzvah. Or you could say something in between. Right? You could say that the rabbis didn't actually neutralize the mitzvah directly, but there's something else that's getting in the way. So what else could possibly get in the way? So we just mentioned two sukkah-specific ideas. Is there anything perhaps broader that might get in the way that may apply to other things as well? The fact that Chazal made a new din here, is there any reason why that may impact on my fulfillment of a mitzvah without going inside the mitzvah and ripping its guts out? But there's something else, perhaps? Okay, so what do you want to do with those asur?
By going against what Chazal has been gozer, you're being over in a certain way.
And therefore what?
And therefore it's because
you're on the right track.
Yeah, I'm
conceptualizing. Okay, you're definitely on the right track. Jake, you want to take it home?
Yeah,
it's
a mitzvah about that neighbor.
Oh, is that what you want to say also? Sure. Right, so maybe we could say you have a mitzvah above, you have a neighbor here. Now, we know that a mitzvah habav yaveira disqualifies the fulfillment of a mitzvah. So one could ask the question, does that only apply when the aveira is an aveira min haTorah, like gezel or something along those lines? And of course, mitzvah habav yaveira itself is a Masechta Sukkah topic, which we'll eventually, God willing, get to. So is that the only context in which it comes up when it's a Torah violation? Or should we say that even an Issa d'Rabbanan is enough to knock you out of the Kiyum HaMitzvah? Sam?
Is it possible that in approaching this question you have to look at it through both lenses, like both sides of Mitzvah and Avera, meaning on one hand you're talking about the Mitzvah,
right,
but that's the d'Rabbanan and the Issa, and how we look at it, and the Avera, whether or not that would be...
Yeah, that definitely is relevant to the question. For our purposes here, let's work on one variable at a time. So let's say the mitzvah is Minat Torah. You're right that it does affect the equation. It's an interesting question to explore. But let's assume for our purpose, talk about a mitzvah Minat Torah, because it's also, the question is going to be more pronounced when the imbalance is there. So let's say a mitzvah d'oraisa and an avera d'rabbanan. Is it possible to say that that avera d'rabbanan also creates a mitzvah habab avera reality? And therefore knocks out the mitzvah fulfillment. So Daniel's saying that, especially since, if we assume like the Rambam, that there's an Isser D'Oraisa, a violation of Lo Sasser, so maybe all the more so, if I can't steal a mitzvah Babi Avera, why should I be able to fulfill a mitzvah and violate Lo Sasser at the same time? So it could be that that's going on here. It could be that maybe we don't have to really take a side on the whole question we were saying yesterday, do Chazal rewrite mitzvahs or not? Because this brings us in from another direction. Maybe they can rewrite mitzvahs, maybe they can't. But there's an issue of mitzvah babi aveir. So that's a possibility. Would that cover, that would broaden it beyond sukkah, but would that cover all the situations that we spoke about yesterday? So remember yesterday, just to review, we mentioned that the question of a d'rabbanan impacting a d'oraisa comes up in many different ways. So we have it, for example, our Tosfos and Daf Gimel. We could ask the question of, what if you blow shofar on Shabbos, something like that, you do a mitzvah that was a mitzvah min haTorah but was prohibited by the rabbi? Or what about a situation where you have a positive mitzvah that's been enhanced by the rabbis, like kiddush or benching? So these may all have different answers. So if we use the mitzvah habavi avera approach, how would that affect these different categories? Would it distinguish between them? What do you think?
Yeah.
Okay. Jacob, how?
Specifically the one where the rabbis are adding on to the mitzvah, like Kiddush, for example, then there's no avera happening if you don't do those add-ons, so therefore the issue would not, the underlying issue, which then requires, does not allow us to be yotzei at the level, doesn't apply, so you won't be yotzei in those types of mitzvahs.
You won't be, or you will be yotzei?
You will be yotzei in those types
of mitzvahs. Okay, so that's a point that was made by Rabbi Farbstein, for example, one of the Rashi Yeshiva, the Chevron Yeshiva, and they published his svarim a few years ago called Knesset Avram. And he points out, like Jacob says, of Avram Farbstein. And he points out, you're quoting him, you should know his name, that pointed out that, like Ms. Axel over here is saying, that this is going to yield a distinction, that not every drabbanim is going to have the same kind of impact, that it would have to be an avera drabbanim. So in a situation like this, where Chazal said, you should not sit in a sukkah like this, so then you could say that that constitutes an avera drabbanim. And if one blows shofar on Shabbos, then one could say even more clearly that that constitutes an avera midrabban. But in a situation where one makes kiddush, but doesn't necessarily go all the way, or benches, but doesn't necessarily go all the way, or any other model you may have like this of a positive mitzvah that maybe has the greater requirements from the rabbis that you're not fulfilling, then maybe we should distinguish. And maybe we should say that there's no mitzvah habavi avera. Yes, Israel.
You say that by not listening, by violating Lo Tasur, that's also mitzvah habavi avera?
Yeah, so the question is, that's the premise here, that a person sitting in the sukkah in a prohibited way is violating Lo Tasur.
Right.
But we say that making kiddush without...
So it's like, yes, in that case, you're also not listening to the rabbi who said that you should add these brachos. Isn't that also violating Lo Tasur?
So that's a much trickier situation, right? Especially because it's not always your intention. And just to... I'll just flesh this question. I'm going to do this later, but just to flesh that a little bit more. Like, so for example, the question when it comes to kiddush, benching is a little bit of a different question. Well, it's relevant also. The kiddush question is very practical. Has a lot of nafkamina, just to give you two cases where this comes up. Let's say there is a big discussion why we make kiddush in shul nowadays. Not every shul does make kiddush. In America, it's still very prevalent. In Eretz Yisrael, a little bit less so, as the earliest farm already wrote. But it's a minig, which even the poskim, for the most part, who don't do it, say that if the minig exists in your shul, it should continue. And it's a whole discussion why. So why do we make kiddush in shul? Once upon a time, the Gemara says in Pesachim, they used to have people eating in shul. But nowadays, maybe you do have people eating in shul, but assuming that in the typical shul, you don't necessarily have anybody eating dinner there. So we don't have kiddush makom suda. Right? So if you don't have that detail of the obligation of kiddush, so why do we bother making kiddush in shul? So there are a number of suggestions, a number of approaches. One approach that you find is that maybe there are people in shul who aren't going to go home and make kiddush for whatever reason. Either they just don't, or they don't have the ability to, or they don't have the context, whatever reason. Maybe there are people in shul who will not fulfill the mitzvah b'shleimus, so they're not going to go home and hear the whole kiddush. So at least let them hear kiddush min ha-Torah. Why? Because the assumption here is that kiddush makom suda is probably a din d'rabban. Some understand it to be a machlokus rishonim, whether kiddush makom suda is a din d'raisa or a din d'rabban. Others assume that really nobody holds its d'raisa. So it's very likely that kiddush makom suda is d'rabban, and that's overwhelmingly likely. So we could say, all right, so you're hearing Kiddush and Shul, it's not where you're having dinner, it's not Makom Suda. But Menat Torah, you don't need Kiddush Makom Suda. So let's say that at least on that level, you'll be accomplishing something. So maybe it's Kedai to make Kiddush and Shul, just in case there are people there who aren't going to fulfill the mitzvah otherwise. And at least they'll get Kiddush on a level Menat Torah. So it becomes important, if this is the motivation, there are other possible motives also, but if this is the motivation, it becomes important. Are we accomplishing anything? Are we actually helping anybody by doing this, or should we say no? Once the rabbis came along and said it's got to be Makom Suda, then this Kiddush is worthless, so it's a bracha levatala. Don't bother, don't make Kiddush for nothing, because if it's not fulfilling every detail midrabanan, it's not doing anything. Is that the angle? Or should we say, no, we take what we can get. If we can get an obligation of Menat Torah here, then let's at least do that, and that justifies the practice of making Kiddush and Shul. So the question becomes practical there. Now, would anyone say that you're a violation of Lo Soster by doing this? Presumably not, especially because it could also come up even unintentionally. That was a discussion, the Magen Avraham was of the position, that just by going to Shul Friday night, and davening, even without making Kiddush, one is in fulfillment of Kiddush Menat Torah. Because like we said yesterday, Menat Torah just says Zachar Shema Shabbos Lekatcha. We mentioned yesterday 15 different shittas exist at least as to what that obligates. So it's very likely that just davening and mentioning Shabbos in your davening, even without the formality of Kiddush Alakos, is already a fulfillment of Kiddush Menat Torah. And in fact, the whole separate discussion, the Noda Bihuda in his commentary to the Shulchan Aruch, it's called Dagol Mervava, raised the question of, isn't it a problem for men to go home and make Kiddush for their wives Friday night? Because Kiddush is an obligation of the Torah equally for men and for women. So if the man goes to Shul and davens Ma'ariv, his Yotzeh Kiddush Menat Torah, according to Magen Avraham, and he's going to go home, his wife's obligated still Menat Torah, she hasn't gone to Shul. And he's only obligated midrabanan. So how could he make Kiddush on her behalf when he's chayiv drabanan and she's chayiv d'oraisa? There are a lot of answers to that question. It's a whole good discussion of itself. Get trying to keep some sense of restraint, but there's a lot to talk about that. But the point is, you see, the situation is, there's a concern that maybe, even without intending to, you could fulfill the Din Menat Torah without the Rabbanan, and then you have an obligation with the Rabbanan to continue finishing off the picture. So there, certainly no one would say, oh, you violated Lo Soster by going to Shul. So apparently the question could exist even without any intent at all. In general, we don't like splitting our mitzvos. That if a mitzvah, certainly l'chadchila, we don't want to say that you should do the mitzvahs in separate parts. Ideally, when you are in control of the situation, you want to fulfill the mitzvah in its shleimus at once. So, for example, the Chassam Sofer writes in his Tshuvas about this question about the Shul Friday night, whether you Yotzei Kiddush or not. So he says that, no, we have kavana not to, because nobody wants to be Yotzei Menat Torah in Shul, because it's not good practice to be Yotze Menat Torah and then have to do the Rabbanim later. You want to do everything at once. Chazal said, do the mitzvah this way. So it's not that you do the Torah obligation first and then later on you fill in the Rabbanim details. That's very not ideal. So we don't want to be Yotze in Shul. So the Chassam Sofer says in his Tshuva that that's the answer. It's Kavana not to be Yotze in Shul, and therefore the husband and the wife are on equal footing. In one place in his Tshuva it sounds like he recommends you should have negative Kavana. In another place, it sounds like he says it's just understood that everyone has negative kavanah. It's kind of built into the system, because since this is a less ideal kind of way to do things, to go home and make Kiddush on a level drabanan when you were reading Yotzei Menat Torah, so then it's already assumed everyone has this negative kavanah. But it highlights this issue that could come up. It comes up in the context of benching also. You may be aware or not aware that some people have a practice not to sing Tzur Mishaloh on Shabbos during the meal. If anything, they sing it after benching. Are you familiar with that practice? What's the concern?
I don't remember
Well, the concern is that maybe you're yotze benching on a level minat Torah by seeing Sor Mishalol, right? Because Tveachalta v'Savata v'Rachta, that's all we know on a level minat Torah. So what language is in Sor Mishalol? It's Sor Mishalol Achalnu Baruch Hu Elokeinu. And so we say that that sounds like you're fulfilling the literal meaning of Yechalta v'Savata v'Rachta. So what would happen if you would say that before benching? So you'd still have to bench on a level midrabanan, but you would have created possibly the situation where you split the Dorais and the Drabanan, so there are those who are machmir not to get into that situation and not sing that song before benching, where it possibly could bring about such a split. I once mentioned this point where I was giving a shiur that happened to be at a meal, and it washed and had not yet benched. And I mentioned this point that people are machmer not to say, so Mishal Achalnu Baruch Elokeinu. It wasn't a Friday night, but I realized that I created that shiloh because I hadn't benched yet during this meal. I just by discussing it had brought about the very issue we're trying to avoid. So then I assume that Ein Lecha Negative Kavana Gedolah Mizu, right? That if you're here explaining why it's a problem, so if we say that Negative Kavana will get you out of it, so Ein Lecha Negative Kavana Gedolah Mizu, that this should count as intention not to be Yotzei benching through that. But in general, it's a problem. You don't want to split the Derises and the Rabbanim. Sorry? Which I mean, it's not the, you know... Possibly. just hum during those words. I mean, it does possibly provoke issues. There's no possibility. Otherwise, any negative kavana should help also. So if your whole family is singing and they're going to throw you out and disown you if you don't sing some Mishalom, you could have negative kavana also. Again, you could also maybe assume it's negative kavana. It's not the only mahalach here. But in general, we don't want to split the fulfillment. And that's why it's probably, according to this, it's not going to be advisable in the situation with the husband and wife in Kiddush to say to the wife, well, she should also say Good Shabbos and find a way to be able to say Kiddush Minat Torah so that they'll be on equal footing. So that to bring her down to his level, that would seem to be inadvisable according to this approach. We want for both of them not to be Yotze Minat Torah before they're fulfilling their Rabbanan obligation to. So that's what the Chassam Sofer writes, that we assume that in Shul you have negative Kavana. But again, when you say you're in violation of the Sasser, presumably not. So this approach, that it's about a mitzvah, Habab Yavera, that probably is not going to address a situation like benching or Kiddush, where you're doing a mitzvah, but you're simply not doing everything about it. Hi.
So the mitzvah of the aveira that's happening by sukkah, it's not below tussar, or it's just that they're a bun. Like, what is the aveira exactly? It's that
in the case here,
the rabbanan told you to do something.
In the case of Rosh and Rubo, or the case
by sukkah, by the shulchan.
So that it sounds like you could say that is an aveira, right? Because the Chazal said, don't do it this way.
But that's not low
tassar,
it's not the
Aveira. No, maybe it is low. I'm saying compared to benching, you know, to say you're in violation of an Aveira at all, it's hard to say. Like, because you went to shul Friday night, do we usually make all to say you're allowed to go to shul Friday night? Right? To say that because you went to shul Friday night, or because you heard Kiddush in shul Friday night, that's a violation of low saucer, that's hard to believe. Even though we advise you not to have Kavanah fulfill the mitzvah for technical reasons, and for reasons of the whole picture of the mitzvah, but to say that it's a lav, you rebelled against Chazal by making Kiddush halfway, that's harder to believe. But here, where it says that you shouldn't do this, right? Chazal never said, don't you dare say Good Shabbos Friday night. Don't you dare say Sing Tzor Mishalo. Chazal said, if you want to fulfill the mitzvah of Kiddush, mitzvah benching, here's what to do. But here, in this context, Chazal says, apparently, don't sit in the sukkah this way. Now, you could question a little bit if that's actually the formulation. But it's certainly the case when it comes to blowing the shofar on Shabbos or taking a lulav on Shabbos. Right there, it's clear we have a prohibition. Don't do this. So one could say certainly more clearly in those cases that if you do this, then maybe I'm not yotze, not because Chazal drained the mitzvah out of it, but because they said don't do it, so it's a violation of lo saser. It's similar perhaps to stealing the object. Now, but we saw yesterday also that there is a view that goes further and says that maybe Chazal do drain the mitzvah of its power. And that has some interesting implications. So we're going to have to continue this over to tomorrow and fill in some other details. But one point that's just one particularly interesting question also, just to get on the table before we run out of time. I think Ravina Yonah we'll have to discuss tomorrow. That's a big one, the Ravina Yonah by Kriyashma. We'll have to discuss that more tomorrow. But you saw the Gemara in Menachos about Sadin B'tzitzis, about the Kiloyim B'tzitzis. So here there's a fascinating discussion that Rabbi Hanan has in the Kovid Tzaris, actually. The Gemara says in Menachos, if you had a chance to see it, that by Torah law, it is permitted and expected that you would put tzitzis on a garment, even if that would create shatness. So let's say you have a linen garment and you're going to attach wool tzitzis to it. So that's okay, it's mutter to do, and then one should do that to fulfill the mitzvah of tzitzis. However, says the Gemara, halacha l'maisa nowadays, we don't do that. Essentially, it's a case of akiras davar min haTorah. By Torah law, you're supposed to put tzitzis on this garment. And the rabbis said no, they invoked the power vested in them that we've been discussing here of akiras davar min haTorah. And they said one should not put tzitzis on this garment, better go without tzitzis. And the Gemara gives a number of reasons why. That apparently they were concerned that you would end up in situations where you'd have the Isser Shatnas without the mitzvah of tzitzis. Like, let's say if you're wearing it at night, or if the garment ripped in such a way that it's not chayiv in tzitzis anymore, so you could end up having shatnas, yes, but tzitzis, no. So the Gemara says a number of reasons why we don't want to have people doing this. So for that reason, Chazal said, forget the Torah law here. Do not put tzitzis on this garment. Do not create shatnas. Leave it as it is, no shatnas and no tzitzis. So the Sefer HaEshkol in Siman Lamed Beis has a fascinating question. He asks the following. Wearing shatnas, as we know, is a iser min haTorah, it's a lav. Right? So somebody who violates shatnas, theoretically, should be chayiv malchus, it's an iser lav. What would you say if somebody were to say, like we were saying yesterday, I'm a Torah Jew. Torah law requires that I put tzitzis on this garment, even if that means shatnas. So I follow the Torah, I'm going to put tzitzis on. Is he chayiv malchus for that? For shatnas? What do you think? What are the issues at hand? Daniel?
He might not be chayiv for maybe if you say that it's, that the Rambam can rewrite the Torah, he will be chayiv shatnas.
Mm-hmm.
If you say that they don't at all, he said somewhere in the middle, he's over.
Something else, right. So here is an interesting question. Rabbi Bachana discusses this, and he quotes that his Rabbi Reb Chaim Brisker had a different understanding. You can take a look over there. But it seems like this is a very interesting example of the question we've been talking about. That by Torah law, the mitzvah of tzitzis comes along and overwhelms the Isser of shatnas. So it's clear that according to Torah law, this guy for sure is not chayv malchus. He didn't do anything wrong. He's not chayv malchus, clearly, according to Torah law. But now the rabbis came and changed something. So what did they do? What did they change? So if they just said, listen, we know the Torah says what it says, and we can't change that, but we are telling you, do not put tzitzis on this garment. So then you could say, all right, well, if I did, then I violated rabbinical law, but I'm not chayiv malchus for that because I didn't violate shatnas. The mitzvah of tzitzis still came and pushed away the shatnas. I was wrong in that I violated rabbinic law, but I didn't violate the issur of shatnas. Right? And perhaps even if one says that rabbinic law redefines the Torah law, but in this case the rabbis didn't address shatnas at all. Right? So the issur of shatnas was taken away by Torah law in this case. So therefore, it's still gone. Or, you could say no. The only reason the Isser Shatnas was suspended is because there was a fulfillment of the mitzvah of tzitzis. The rabbis drained the mitzvah out of tzitzis. So therefore, in this case, there's no mitzvah. So you are no better than Stam, a rebellious guy who's wearing shatnas for fun. maybe there's no difference between this guy and any other Shatnez wearing rogue. That's a very interesting question. You see, and this also revolves around this issue of just what is the impact of rabbinic law and how it affects things. So there's endless wonderful material on this topic. We'll have to see how many more days we can spend on it, but there's a lot of different angles, certainly tomorrow. Then we'll assess after tomorrow how much more we'll be able to focus on it. But we still have to discuss that with Rabbeinu Yonah, and we have to see what else can we understand in terms of how this issue plays out, and try to get to the core of things, what's really at the foundation of this whole issue, and how we can make it make sense. All right, so wish everyone a wonderful Tuesday. Should be only good things, and I will see you soon. All right.